You can now listen to Conning the Con ad-free on Apple subscription and buymeacoffee.com/Conning the Con. But that is not all you will find there. I've got two little words for you. Tonka Trilogy. If you know, you know, right? And if you don't, keep listening to Conning the Con and it will all become clear soon enough. And if you want a sneak peek, head over to @ConningTheCon on Instagram and get a look at the lighter side of this, well, very heavy con story. Simply click the subscribe button now on Apple Podcasts for ad-free and bonus content. Or if you aren't an Apple user, head to buymeacoffee.com/ConningTheCon, where on top of that ad-free and bonus content, you can access exclusive videos. You'll find all the links, as always, in the show notes. Have you ever felt that pang of disappointment when you couldn't add a ticket to your collection because it was digital? Or maybe you just lost it? Well, StubForge.com is here to change that. Imagine this: tickets that not only look but feel like the real deal, because each ticket from StubForge is printed on the same quality stock that Ticketmaster uses and printed with genuine ticket printers. It's like holding a piece of the concert, the game, or the show right in your hands. But StubForge isn't just about replacing tickets. With the easy-to-use interactive designer, you can create custom tickets for anything, from concerts to sports games, pregnancy announcements, or parties. Why not make your invitations stand out with tickets that are as unique as your event? And if you're trying to complete a back catalogue of missing tickets, StubForge offers bulk discounts to make it both easy and affordable. With StubForge, you can once more give your loved ones physical tickets and see their eyes light up instantly at the best gift you can give. So whether you're looking to reignite your ticket collection, craft the perfect gift, or send the coolest invites, head over to StubForge.com. Start creating today and see how StubForge makes every ticket a story worth saving. Visit StubForge.com and start making tickets today.
Something is creeping in. Don't follow it down.
You may know them as con artists, grifters, confidence men, charlatans, or even swindlers, but you won't know them by sight. These shapeshifters hide in plain view, and for those unfortunate enough to cross paths with them, like my sister Emma, the trail of anarchy left in their wake is devastating. Coming up in this episode...
My brother was like, well, that sounds dodgy. That doesn't sound like it needs to happen in the first place.
But certainly nothing that, right, that you would think actually this guy is a complete con, because who thinks like that?
That's when I start thinking... Who wants to go to jail just for nothing?
But it just kept sitting with me. It just kept sitting with me, and my gut just kept basically screaming at me, something is not right. Something is not right, and make sure she doesn't lend him any money.
I'm Sarah Ferris.
And I'm Emma Ferris, and this is my story, Conning the Con.
Something is creeping in, don't follow it down.
So they've done research with people who are high in psychopathy, and they get women to rate them on their dating desirability. And they find that the higher someone is in psychopathic traits, the more desirable they are rated as potential partners by women. This is a real phenomenon that exists. They are very compelling and attractive.
Dr. Muir there with a genuinely chilling fact. We seem to be built with some kind of self-sabotage switch or a dodgy dude picker predisposition. I guess the only saving grace for those on the dating scene is that the numbers of potential partners with psychopathy, it is relatively low, 1% of the population or thereabouts. So for the majority of those swiping left and right, the odds of meeting a person with psychopathy would be forever in your favour. But there is, of course, that 1% chance that you might be as unlucky as my sister Emma was when she swiped right on the man she knew as Andrew Thompson. Now, I'm no psychologist and certainly in no position to know whether Andrew fitted into that 1%. We can't ever really know what his true intentions were when he went on Tinder that day. But as you hear the story, I'm sure you'll come to your own conclusions. They'd been dating since October 18, and by that December, their relationship was deepening. But it hadn't all been plain sailing. His lack of online profile, it seemed like a minor red flag compared to the alleged wrongful imprisonment in a Melbourne jail for 6 months. So how did Andrew manage to overcome what in hindsight are obvious warning signs? What Emma would probably describe now as warning signs with bright flashing and screaming sirens attached to them.
Small things that add up over time. You know, it's the ringing and checking in on you and the texts all the time.
Mm-hmm.
Not so controlling, but just that kind of, like, he was there, he was listening and worried about things. And then there was things like presents and love bombs and gifts, like those things that that kind of would just come out of nowhere. One of the things that kind of always stands out to me, and it almost grates at me now, is this present he gave to me for Christmas. And one of them was a book for me, and the other one was a book actually for my children, or for me to help with, I guess, parenting. And he given me this book called The Barefoot Investors. He knew that that was a really important thing for me, is teaching my kids financial stability. It was like, you know what, I'm going to help give you this information and be an important person, show that I'm ready for a ready-made family, which is the words he used to use. So there was those kind of presents, and then he would take me away. So my birthday and Christmas, it was like, let's go to Auckland, I'll take you. You know, I'm just going to, it's all on me, just come along and we'll just take you away. And I'm not someone that's necessarily comfortable with that sort of stuff. Like, I do like to be a bit Dutch and share, and especially getting to know somebody. Like, it almost got to the point where I felt like I was living beyond my means. I didn't want to do that.
The kind of grand gestures and spontaneity and sweep you off your feet type behaviors can tend to signal kind of impulsiveness. But again, like, some of these things that can be part of just falling in love, and people do spontaneous romantic gestures. So again, it's like putting it in the context of all the other warning signs that you're getting.
So Dr. Muir's not saying next time your new partner whisks you off on a romantic getaway, shop him as a con man immediately, but she is saying do check in with all the other signals you're getting and listen to that all-important gut reaction. For Emma, it appeared that Andrew was wanting to invest time and money into building a future together. But he still had plenty of other plates spinning, and talk of his work, well, it was never very far away.
So he had an alcohol business that he was buying into, and he also had a restaurant that he was currently looking at buying as well, completely outright. And then he also had a lot of involvement with trucking companies, because that was part of his past in Australia, and he was working with a national trucking company that involved freighting cold products around New Zealand. And then he was also working with a local company based in central Otago. And then there was property, which was the one that he began to add in over the few months. Property was something that he knew I was interested in, and he was all about developing that. So that wasn't at the start, but he started to bring that in.
So many business ventures, I cannot keep them all straight. Have you ever heard the saying, throw something at the wall and see what sticks? Kind of felt like that's what Andrew was doing. He had created a broad enough range of business ventures that maybe at least one of them would help him part Emma with her money. And it wasn't long before he narrowed that down to property. So Andrew starts to gently blur the lines between business and the relationship. He does it little by little, and even date by date.
Some of the dates was actually taking me to the properties that he was trying to look at buying and was wanting me to be involved with long term. So he took me to one in a place called Moke Lake and drove me past that and was like, this is where it is. So there were so many parts of it that were that trust building. I think that's part of it too, is when you're in a relationship and you're starting to get to know someone, there are so much happy hormones. You want to trust this is good, and you feel swept away. So, like, I'm not going to deny that it was lovely to be treated nicely, and that yeah. Dopamine, happy hormones, it's like that's what the foundations of what I guess love builds from. And so I know that clouds judgment, and as well as you kind of need to listen to your gut and check these things, when I did do that, I couldn't get the information that I needed at that point.
It is very tricky, because in hindsight, a lot of things will seem so obvious now that might not have at the time. But I think one of the important things is obviously checking in with that gut instinct, and that's all along the way. It's noticing the difference between maybe how you feel when you're with them versus how you feel afterwards. So I think that's probably where you'll find a real incongruence. So when you're with them, You feel enthralled and captivated and excited. But if you're left leaving that interaction feeling like really perplexed and confused and like, well, hold on, something's missing, I think that's something to check in with throughout the way.
Ah, the all-important gut there again. And Emma's, she knew, was feeling a little bit off, but she was confused. And the reason she felt confused was part of Andrew's credibility. It came from adding a sprinkling of truth to his many, many lies.
Well, one of the things was the wakeboarding and water skiing. So he talked about being a competitive wakeboarder and water skier. He then showed me really that he could do all of that stuff. And so he's behind my family boat and he gets out there and then he pops up and just goes foom and like skied it like he owned it. Dropped the one ski and the kids were even like, my little boy goes, show off.
Andrew didn't actually meet the children until February 2019. But before he could meet the children, there was one hurdle he had to get past first, and that was meeting our family. Now, being from a large family scattered around New Zealand, and for my part, the other side of the world, it takes a really special occasion to bring us all together. So my mum's surprise 70th birthday was the perfect occasion for us to meet Emma's new boyfriend. It wasn't going to be plain sailing for Andrew. As a collective, we had our doubts about this guy that just sounded a little bit too good to be true. And Emma had already told him it was likely to be a bit of a meet the fockers, minus the lie detector machine. If only we'd had one of those.
Well, along the way, they definitely had sort of, he'd heard us go, that this doesn't sound right. I'd gone back and said, my family's kind of a bit, you know, you want to, he'd said to me he wanted to lease this Audi car. And that he was getting this Audi car as part of his business and that it was coming from Australia. And my brother was like, well, that sounds dodgy. That doesn't sound like it needs to happen in the first place.
And it wasn't just the family that had questioned Emma's new relationship with Andrew. Her friends were also feeling uneasy. In the aftermath, Emma asked her friend Jo what her initial reaction was when she had shared details of this budding romance.
I remember going, just losing my breath for a minute. And I did lose my breath and thought, this is your life, I suppose, because you're the one that's made the decision. You seem to have talked me out a little bit of stuff because you just seemed so positive. So it would be like, you would talk me out of it. So I'd be like going on with, oh, yeah, well, she thinks it's okay. Maybe it is. Maybe I'm overthinking it.
And Emma's friend, Sasha, who was one of her closest confidants, as well as her workmate, had a similar reaction.
I mean, there was things that I was just like, that's strange, that doesn't really make sense, but Emma seems to be happy and I'm not sure. So there was definitely sort of little warning bells all along, but certainly nothing that, right, that you would think actually this guy is a complete con, because who thinks like that? I certainly was not thinking like that.
So it's fair to say that we were all pretty sceptical of this guy and his supposed business Midas touch. He was definitely on our radars. It was around that time that the Netflix series Dirty John had come out. And if you've been living under a rock and haven't seen it, it's the true story of an American woman who is targeted by a con man straight out of prison. Being a lover of true crime, I had immediately binged the series, and on our next Skype catch-up, I couldn't resist asking Emma how her new boyfriend, Dirty Andrew, was. It was tongue-in-cheek, but in all honesty, I really just wanted to test how he would react.
Well, he didn't really like that, and I ended up watching the last few episodes by myself because I was like, this is fascinating. And he said he did watch it as well because he loves kind of disturbing stuff.
He really does. We have the same Netflix binge.
Yeah, you guys actually kind of got on really well, and that was an important person for me, was you meeting him to see your reaction in many ways.
Yeah.
And you grilled him. You grilled him on the couch, and you were like, okay, tell us about this. And he's told story after story that he told me,
he did.
Again, straight to your face.
Yeah. I mean, I really did go in there looking to find fault. And then when I met him, I just thought, he's just so, like, affable and charming, but not arrogant and just easygoing. And I couldn't put my finger on it. I couldn't, and I understand how it happens because even going into it knowing that we felt that way, I still walked away thinking, okay, I think he's just one of these people that's really a bit of a risk taker with business, a real entrepreneur, and
a mover and a shaker, but in a really nice way, and he's got a kind heart. That's how I felt when I'd met him.
Yeah.
So now I've been sucked in as well. I mean, how could I have gone from skeptical Sarah to sucked in Sarah so quickly? All the stories that Emma had told me over FaceTime about him, well, they were still red flags, and yet on meeting him, he could overcome them so effortlessly. So we asked Dr. Muir, why is it that humans default to truth?
This one depends on your worldview. I think there are a lot of people out there who trust wouldn't be the default for. But if overall you've had mostly positive experiences in interpersonal relationships and you've got the belief system that you're a competent, good person, other people are trustworthy, the world is a safe place, you haven't been betrayed before significantly, you're going to tend to interpret your experiences through that worldview. So you'll be wanting your experiences to be coherent and to fit with that. So you'll probably be more likely to filter information to fit within that picture. But also there is an evolutionary advantage to trusting people. We evolved in these kind of hunter-gatherer groups where we needed to be cohesive units and get along and have some degree of trust. So trust does have advantages. Of course, you needed to have some alertness to threat, but it is an adaptive trait overall.
And so at that point then, after kind of a few more months, he did meet my kids and, you know, I was so nervous. And he won them over.
Straight away.
And I think that, he did. He had them laughing and happy. And I've obviously been on a roller coaster with this, and I'm still very angry that he would bring that into it, because those two people do not deserve to have that. So I guess, yeah, moving on from that, he just becomes a bit more in my day-to-day life. We still live further apart, but then he'd always talked about moving over to where I was. He ended up moving in March of 2019 over to Queenstown, and he rented a beautiful property, and his mum came over at that point to help. She was coming over anyway for his birthday, and she stayed for about a week. Honestly, she was, again, salt of the earth, lovely woman, really kind and sweet to have around, and I just, you know, I wanted to get to know her as part of that, because she was actually the first person that I'd really got to know as part of this family or a circle.
And what better way to build trust than to introduce his lovely, kind-hearted mother to Emma? It seems like a very risky move on Andrew's part for several reasons, not least of all being that he was using a fake last name. There was a real risk he was going to blow his cover. Why do con artists throw so much caution to the wind?
People who con others, the whole sort of part of their personality structure is that they don't care about risk. They're not deterred by risk. That's where they live, in that risk zone. That's their day-to-day for them. They're always carrying the risk that this house of cards could collapse. So while it might seem like just irrational to someone else, that's just their way of life.
But let's go back to Andrew's circle of friends. I wanted to know why, after months of dating, Emma wasn't concerned that she hadn't met anyone other than his mother.
And it was times we'd be going out and he goes, oh, I'll try and get hold of him and see if I can meet up. And, oh, these guys are away for the weekend, but when we've got the new house, they'll come and stay because they'll love that. And it felt like he knew them again because of the stories he told, the photos he showed me.
Mm-hmm.
And he's like, oh, they've just gone away. It's so annoying. And you're like,
So it wasn't like Andrew didn't have any friends. It's just they were all away on holiday at the same time for months on end. But luckily for Andrew, Emma wasn't overly concerned because she had met his mother, a real-life salt-of-the-earth human being, and that gave Emma a level of security. But we still had our doubts, and that had resulted in us getting Emma to confront Andrew on more than one occasion.
One of the times was when he was part of it was to do with you, Sarah, when you were questioning his passport and to make sure I could see his name. I think it was around January when I was going to be going away with him flying. So he's like, just see if you can see his passport. He wasn't happy. He was just like, well, you know, you shouldn't have to do that. I shouldn't have to prove that to you in the first place. And it was a small thing, but it kind of came up. And then there was another time as well, things like the business. That was the other ones that pushed back, because my brother was, you know, I'd already done the research looking into these companies and looking on the company website and going, because, you know, I'm a director of my own company, so I was checking to see that he was a director in these companies he was saying he was in, and he wasn't. And I mean, obviously that's a red flag in the first place, but I was like, I want to know
why? And so I asked him, and he said, well, actually, it's I've got an agreement with these with the current owners that this is a transition, and that I'm going to be taking over or been buying in, and it's all to do with my Aussie business and Kim, my accountant, and transitioning over. Which, you know, I kind of went, okay. And I remember telling that back to my brother again, and he's like, that doesn't sound right still. So I went back and I pushed, and I got this, look, your brother doesn't understand business. He doesn't understand it, which is quite funny because he's a general manager in a company. But I remember going, or maybe there is a different arrangement here, or like, you know, it's, but still not being comfortable with it. But he just pushes, he pushed back. And that was the bit where you're like, I couldn't find the information that I wanted to find to actually prove or disprove.
From October through to December, Andrew had spent his time laying the foundations for what would turn out to be his house of cards. But by December, he really needed to get things moving along.
So in December 2018, Andrew introduced a friend and a guy that had helped him out in the last few years in investing. And his name was Ari. And Ari was someone that I've never heard of it before him before. And the way that Andrew painted Ari was he was the guy that got him into investments and gave him a leg up. And the reason why he did this was because he said that he saw potential in Andrew and he would probably help out with me is where he was going with that. I was like, oh, okay, I don't really know about that. And so he kept explaining how Ari had been introduced to him by a good friend in Tasmania, but actually Ari was from Sydney and he had an amazing lifestyle. He had the cars, he was married, but he had he was traveling everywhere, didn't work that much, but he had these phenomenal projects, often property development, again, property development that I loved. And then he told me about how they actually met. So they met in a Hobart restaurant. And they just clicked, apparently. It was just an amazing connection. And they just, you know, all the ideas that Andrew was telling them about, Ari got on board with. And so they decided to make a deal that day. And their first deal, apparently, was done on a napkin. And maybe he was setting the scene for me to be able to be as, you know, frivolous or excited about deals that you do it in that way. But I just went, oh, that's interesting. I hope you got a full loan document after that. So Ari kept coming up and in the next few weeks, and he talked about how Ari was giving him a really high interest rate because of the fact that he was investing early, but the, you know, the project was safe, of course, when there's a high interest rate. And he was really excited about this next project, which that one was going to be a car park development. And he said, you know what, babe, I can talk to Ari and see if you want to be involved. Maybe he'll be able to give you the same interest rate and see how we go from there. And my initial gut reaction was like, no, thank you. I don't want to be involved with anybody I don't understand or know. Even if he is someone that you know, that doesn't mean that that's anything that I want to be involved in. I liked knowing where my money was, what I was doing, and it didn't feel right at all. So he still kind of came back and then even emailed me, I think, afterwards and sort of said, look, I can connect you with Ari. He can give you a bit more information about the project and what's going on. And that was, again, December. I still went back and said, no, that is not what I'm interested in. Ari is not someone that is, yeah, I don't really want to be involved with it. He still comes back and says, well, you know what? I'm going to invest in him. And then I've also put another fund in there. And Ari thinks this is hilarious. I have created the Love Fund. Yep, the Love Fund. So the Love Fund is supposed to be this small little nest egg just for us. So he put $25,000 into this Love Fund. Bearing in mind, I had no interest in doing this. I didn't want to be involved in it. This is not the time when you start combining money or allocating money to someone in a relationship. So it should have been a red flag. But I was like, oh, whatever. You can do what you want. It's not my... not for me. And he's like, it will be for us. It'll be for us for holidays and travel and anything special we want to do. And I'm like, okay. Still, I'm not interested. Okay, so he left it at that point with Ari, that is.
A love fund? That is pretty intense for a relationship that was only a few months in. They seem to be moving at very different speeds. Andrew, he was full throttle, but Emma was still idling and not quite ready to commit to a project together with a mystery man called Ari. Fair enough. She was, however, making plans for investing in her own future.
I was about 2 years post-divorce, and I was at the stage where I wanted to get even further back on my feet. Like we'd done pretty well. My ex and I were actually really kind to each other, and would separate things out, and we're going really well. But I was wanting to make sure that I could build a future for the kids and I, something that was stable, and that I wanted to look at how I could do that. And in the past, what I'd done was been involved in property. So I'd brought property in a local town close by, and my ex-husband and I had developed that and sold it on when we looked at separating. So it was something that I knew, and I actually really enjoyed that process of buying and developing properties. So earlier on in the dating with Andrew, I definitely brought up the fact that I'd done these developments in Cromwell, not in a way to say that this is something that I was wanting to do at all at that point, but just that, you know, I've been involved in this sort of stuff. This is things that I really enjoyed. And so he did kind of know, but never in the sense as much as that property was my one of my investment focuses. But it did end up going down that way in December. I was starting to look at those options, and so I wasn't being really open with him by any means. I was starting to talk to the bank and look at how I could get funding for that next stage for me.
As Emma positions herself to be ready for her own future investments, Andrew's attempts to part Emma with her money, they've hit a bit of a brick wall. But he's not prepared to give up that easily. And now a word from our sponsors.
The truth about the Haditha massacre has been covered up, but not anymore.
I know you know what happened.
They went into houses and killed women and children.
What are you thinking?
What a mess.
U.S. Marines murdered innocent civilians in cold blood.
And at the center of it all
is 25-year-old Sergeant Frank Wooderick.
And me. Murder in House 2. A new podcast from Crowd Network.
Greetings from Evergreen Podcasts. We're rolling out a listener survey, and we want to hear from you. The information in the survey will help us gather statistics and in turn make our shows more appealing to advertisers. I know most people don't like ads, but this is one of the only ways our shows make money and help keep their lights on. We promise it will only take a few minutes, but the impact on our podcasts will be tremendous. As a token of our appreciation, we'll randomly select one lucky participant each month to win an exclusive merchandise package from Evergreen Podcasts. Head to evergreenpodcast.com/listener survey to help a show and possibly get some free stuff for doing so. We can't thank you enough for the support. Now back to the show.
Something is creeping, don't follow it down.
Let me introduce you to Barry Clue, an authorised financial advisor from New Zealand and a very special kind of stain on humanity.
He was a very knowledgeable young guy.
He was a registered financial advisor.
Type of guy that was bending over backwards to help you.
Now, you could be forgiven for thinking that Barry sounds like a great guy. And you'd be right. Well, right up until the point when you're wrong.
It was all fictitious.
You stole from my son, who has a disability.
Chris never knew. He died believing that we're all taken care of.
A psychopath is somebody who lacks empathy, acts impulsively. I think there's a strong case that Barry might be all of those things, actually.
To find out how Barry Clue stole over $15 million from 81 victims, subscribe to Clueless, The Long Con. That's Clueless, spelt Clooghless.
At that point, I think Andrew was kind of like, oh, this is a bit frustrated with the fact that I hadn't just jumped at the REI idea. And he kept including one of his special people, I guess, that he would see it as part of his business team. And that was an accountant, the accountant in Australia. And she was been involved with him all the way from restaurants and trucking companies. So he felt that she was a really important part, and more than just an accountant. She was there to support him, and from what he said, he was often on the phone or in emails back and forth to her. And then in February 2019, He said he was getting to the point where he was going to be moving over to Queenstown, where he'd been putting off since November, because that was what he'd said for me to even be, even to hang out, basically. I was like, not really my thing doing distance, but he was like, no, it's going to happen. It's going to be fine. And so I that was one of the things I kind of pushed back at, because I was like, I just don't want this arrangement. And then he's like, no, I found some place, but you know what the problem is? Is that the property managers, they won't understand my financial document. You know, it's pretty complex, babe. Needless to say, I get this email in February, which has his financial document attached. And it was literally along that lines of, you know, I thought I'm just getting organized to get the property. And just so for your comfort, you understand where I'm at. And he attached this financial document. And what it had on there is it had a combination of all the businesses that he'd been working on, all the stories he'd told. So it was pretty in depth. It showed the investments which would be with Ari, like how much he'd been put into there. It had shown the money that had been invested into restaurants that he was still getting shares from. And that totaled $12 million, apparently. So I sat with that and just kind of went, oh, wow, okay, so what am I actually dealing with here? And I first gut was like, okay, that's pretty open and honest. And I did not ask for that, did not expect that. And then I remember going, still feels very early to be sharing that kind of information, or that I, you know, to really want that. So that, in many ways, it should have been a red flag as well. The reason why he was showing me that was he needed to show a proof of income. And the real estate company that he was working with, or the property management, they needed to know actually who this person was. But they believed it just as I did.
It still baffles me that document showing Andrew's financial position to be $12 million, it got past banks and lawyers, real estate agents, and all the while without being exposed as a fake at any point.
So Andrew knew by that stage I wasn't going to be working with Ari. That was just not an option. So he subtly kind of just dropped this little wee conversation, and it was when I was really busy, so February and March, and he saw that. He saw that I was working really hard, and he said, you know what? I think I can help you out. I think I can be your Ari. And that was I was like, what do you mean? How can you be my Ari? And he goes, well, I've been meaning to step into a kind of angel investing or supporting people for a long time. And I want to be able to get people that have been, that are important to me, the leg up that I was given, that Ari gave me. And he's like, well, you're a perfect opportunity because I care for you and I've got the means. You know what my businesses are doing. They're doing really well, but they could do with a bit of investment to help push them along, particularly the properties development in Queenstown that he'd shown me as well. So he was like, you know what, there's some really good opportunities here. And I just went, yeah, no, I'm not really, still not like into the idea of it. It was just like, no, not really. And he goes, well, you know that I can, that I've got the money behind it. I've got the funds. You've seen that. So the document that he'd sort of laid a few weeks before then came up as this kind of like proof. He then said, look, just don't think about it. I'm going to put something in writing.
So later that evening, Emma goes into her office and finds Andrew's proposal and is somewhat underwhelmed.
So the deal on the paper, and it was only one page, it was pretty light on details, to be honest, and it would not be a legally binding document by any means. And I said to him, look, well, I'll look at it and think it over. And all that was on there was this idea that I could loan as much money as I wanted to him, and that there'd be a really high interest rate, like we're talking 67%, something ridiculous, and that at any stage I could take that money out. It was more the verbal one. That wasn't in that piece of paper, but he always said that all the way through, look, any stage you need that money, something changes, I can give it back to you straight away.
Initially, the document suggested that the money would go into Andrew's business to be used whenever or wherever he had need for it. But Emma didn't bite. She wanted a tangible investment, and if she was going to invest her money, it would only be if it was solely used for the property development in Queenstown.
So I was like, well, he's shown me that property. He's shown me ideas and designs. I've been to it several times now. He's even given me documents. So I was like, okay, well, I know what it's going to be looking at, but still, this isn't good enough. Like, this document, even I was like, are you serious? I was like, well, if I'm going to move forward with this or even have a discussion, I've got to pull this through past my mentors and people that support me. And so I went to my accountant, who is fabulous and amazing. And she just said, look, I'm not the one to advise on this. You need to go and get really solid legal advice on this. And so I went and talked with my lawyer at the time, who was also the lawyer for the alcohol company, I found out later.
So Andrew was known to Emma's lawyer. Granted, he wasn't representing him directly, but rather Andrew wasn't an unknown quantity to him. And who knows, maybe that did work in his favour. But I can't help but think it did make it easier for Andrew to ensure that at no point was his real identity discovered during that process.
But one of the things from that for me was that I thought by having a document like this, I was protected, that I'd gone down the legal pathway, that if something went wrong, if we weren't together, and you know that could happen quite quickly, I would still have been okay.
That loan agreement, it felt to Emma like it was watertight. She knew he had the money in Australia, but that was not as easy to verify from New Zealand. So Andrew put up the property in Moke Lake as security. That lovely plot of land that he had taken Emma to on one of their first dates. So Emma is feeling pretty good at this point. She's dotted all the I's and crossed all the T's.
At that point, I decided to put $50,000 in that first loan.
6 months of graft, and Andrew has finally hit the payload. For Emma, the interest payments, they're rolling in, and she's feeling excited at the prospect of the extra time with her children, which was the driver all the time, and that financial freedom that the money affords. And that 50K? Well, that's not going to burn a hole in Andrew's pocket for long.
So he then was able to move into that rental property and in Queenstown. And that rental was $800 a week. So that place, I mean, it's not cheap and it's just him living in it. At that point, he wasn't a director in the alcohol company. He was still only a director in the ATI company, his own business that he was named under as the main shareholder and director. And I know that he said that he'd also put his lawyer on retainer as part of that. He'd also turned up with a new Ford Ranger.
New house, a new car, a lawyer on retainer, and let's not forget those hefty interest payments he was paying Emma every week. Andrew was burning through that cash at a rate of knots. And what's a con artist to do when they run out of cash? Well, I'll give you one guess.
So Andrew came to me in March after I'd really done a month of the investing with him and had the payments. There had been two payments by that stage. At that point, I wasn't worried about doing any more or anything else with him. It was like, that was great. That was helping cover mortgage. And I was quite happy with what was going on. But he came back to me and we were in Glenorchy at the time. And he said, you know what? I'm really, really excited that I can still help you out. And if I want to give you the things that you have always wanted, which was the financial security. But the reality of that was so that I had freedom with my kids. So he knew that motivation. He knew that that was my most important thing in my life. And so he came back and said, look, we can do the same deal if you want. You can invest as much as you want, you know, as much as you feel comfortable with. And I can give you the same great deal. And what we're doing at the moment is that property development that we've been working with in Queenstown, that is moving forward. I've got that. It's all signed up and we've now paid the deposit. So we now need that funding to be able to take it to the next level. So he'd painted this picture that the money that was going to be going was always earmarked for that property and that was also part of the future for a possible us. I sat with it and I did numbers and I was like, okay, gosh, this would make a big difference to me. I know I can leverage the mortgage. And again, this is something that I was going to do anyway. I'd already been working in that pathway. As part of the loan application, Andrew said that he could actually help me out and support that. And he said, look, I can talk to the bank. I can talk to your manager. And so I ended up connecting them and he actually emailed her, I think with the document as well, the Kim document showing him how much money he had, but also said in writing to the manager that he can personally guarantee he has $12 million in assets and this shouldn't be an issue at all.
He really was making a meal out of that fake financial document. I personally never saw it, but it must have been a good one because even the bank accepted it as gospel.
So one of my best mates, Sasha, her and I run women's retreats and men's retreats. We chat all the time. So she knew about Andrew and how he was involved in my life. But it wasn't until the retreat that we were on in March that I sort of let her in a bit more about what he was doing and his financial background and how he was helping me or going to help me out. So I told her because she's been my rock for so many things and I trust her. And I wanted just to kind of sound off somebody. And it was during the retreat that we actually talked.
I think as soon as you said you were going to lend him money, that definitely put warning bells for me. And I remember you telling me on that retreat and it just didn't sit right with me. And it was at that point, because up until that point, I was like, well, you know, it's really, it's interesting how our minds work. I was kind of like, well, you know, I don't know, there's some things not adding up, but has it really got that much to do with me? And she seems happy. But then there was, when you said you were going to lend him some money, I was like, this does not feel right to me at all. And I think that's when I started questioning you and just saying, how much have you checked into this? You know, have you really checked it out? But I also knew you and I knew that you checked details thoroughly. So that's why I was sort of confused. You assured me. But then after that, I came back up home, up into the North Island, but it just kept sitting with me. And my gut just kept basically screaming at me, something is not right. Something is not right. And make sure she doesn't lend him any money.
At this stage, I was actually getting excited in the fact that I was going to be able to put this investment in place to then be able to step back. So 5th of April was the day, it was a Friday, and it was when we were setting up the trust documents so that the loan could be created. So that was all done and dusted on the Friday. On Monday, the 8th of April, that is when the funds came into my bank account. And so that is when I had $250,000 New Zealand dollars arrive in my account. And at that moment, it felt like a really big deal. And that day on the Monday, Andrew had said, look, you know, send it over when you're ready, send over that money, it's fine, just when you're ready. And before that, he had been pushing at me to get that organized, to get things going. It was very much like, is it set up now? Is it ready to go? And so that $250,000 that was in my account got transferred over to him on Monday, the 8th of April. But on April the 9th, at 7:30 a.m. in the morning, my world came tumbling down. And that's when I found out who he really, really is.
The shadow dark upon the wall, moving slow and stretching tall, and her hands hold him up, that's cold. A shadow dark upon the wall, moving slow and stretching tall, and up to the mountains her gaze is pulled.
If you liked our story, please share with family and friends. And like, subscribe and review so others can learn from my lessons. If you or anyone you know has been affected by something similar, please reach out for help. You are not alone. We've included some links in our show notes. Conning the Con was made with the input of Dr. Sophie Muir, and the original music is by the talented Aroha Min.
Something is creeping in, don't follow it down. Something is creeping in, don't follow it down.
Check out
Check out more podcasts from Community Podcast Productions, like this one. I'm Sarah Ferris, true crime podcaster.
And I'm Catherine Schweit, the former head of the FBI's active shooter program.
And we have a, well, not so gently named podcast called Stop the Killing. Yep, there's a clue in the title. We need your help to end the global mass shooting epidemic. Find out how as we bring you the stories right from the source.
If you would have told me that a Columbine could happen at Columbine, I would have said no way.
I remember just thinking, he's got a gun. Something rose up inside, and I said, not my school.
What we can't underestimate is the power that individuals could have in stopping these school shootings.
My little boy, Alex, was murdered. If we can fix the failures, we can save lives.
My daughter, Elena, was killed. She'd want me to do something about this. I know she would do something about it.
Join us and be part of the solution. Subscribe now to Stop the Killing podcast on Apple, Spotify, or wherever you listen to your true crime podcasts.
Hello, this is Dr. Grande, the host of True Crime Psychology and Personality. On my podcast, I explore and explain the pathology behind some of the most horrendous crimes and those who commit them. We discuss topics like narcissism, psychopathy, sociopathy, and antisocial personality disorder from a scientifically informed perspective. What is a narcissist? How do you spot a sociopath? What signs can you look for to protect yourself from these dangerous personalities? It's not just about the stories, but also the science and psychology behind them. So if you're interested in true crime or mental health, I'd encourage you to give my show a listen wherever you get podcasts.
Coming up on 5 Minute News, I'm Anthony Davis. You might think it's partisan because maybe it's critical of one side or the other, but it's not. It's just the truth. And I think that's also something that's kind of unusual for Americans listening to the radio or to podcasts, because the news landscape in the States has been so partisan for so many decades. So 5 Minute News is verified, truthful, independent, unbiased, and essential world news daily.